What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producers Corner with Spud 2 Titan. Man, I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented violinist who's definitely stepped outside the box as a traditional violinist. In addition to performing as an artist, he has scored major motion picture film and television spots and has toured around the world displaying his talents. Please put your hands together and welcome jazz, rock, electronic violinist, and composer, Mr. Noel Webb. How's it going, Noel?
Hey, Spud. Everybody there, yeah.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for joining my show and, you know, chopping it up with me, Noel, man. You know, it's truly an honor, man. I really appreciate your talent.
Well, thank you. You know, just your show is really the finest show I know of to be interviewed on, so I'm glad to be here. It's great.
Oh, thank you so much, man. Thank you. You know, Noah, I had a chance to listen to a couple of your tracks, man. Take the Journey, The Ride, and She's a Tease. And it just blew me away when I heard it, man. You know, again, I'm used to hearing, you know, traditional classical violinist. And, you know, hearing your tracks and your compositions, man, it has so much edge and it has so much contemporary flavor into it. I mean, it's just really appealing, man. I just instantly just gravitated to it immediately.
Yeah, that's very nice to hear you say that, but particularly coming from you. It's really a blues violinist and classically trained. So, you know, it's funny because people talk to me about the style that I'm presenting in that CD, and even as you're saying that to me, it's been so long since I've been playing for so long that I don't really know how it all came to pass. That's so crazy. It's like, you know, how does Give It All, that's the name of the CD, happen? And I'm thinking, well, just because it's sort of time for it, I guess that's really where it's at.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, man. You know, it's, you know, guys have been performing and composing and producing for so long. You know, I just kind of look at, you know, you and some of the other mentors out there. You really don't have a particular flavor or style or method in your composition. It really just comes through experience and ear development and training and performing, you know, different spots. And yeah, man, those inspirations definitely translate well on your CDs.
Yeah, you said it just right. That's a perfect way to describe it, Spud. What happens eventually, you know, rather than searching for what will sell or the recent discussion about some of the jazz or what's going on with this or that, or you have to just play. You have to do your thing. That just blows you away when you're in the studio with your great musicians. Those guys on that CD, I just love the heck out of their playing. And live is even better when we play, so it's fantastic.
Noah, how did you start as a violinist? And, you know, when did you merge into the music business? As a performer, or did you come in as a composer?
I was trained classically, and I was in the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra when I was 14. My mother's a graduate of Juilliard, so I played piano and violin and all the instruments classically. In fact, when all the other kids were listening to rock and jazz, I was really completely into Debussy and Tchaikovsky and Beethoven. I didn't even know that the world was even there, believe it or not. And I went to college in Maine, Bowdoin College in Maine, and graduated there. But when I was there, a guy, this is the strangest story, a guy threw earphones on the back of my head, it's a joke, and there was Led Zeppelin, Ozzy Osbourne, singing some kind of a Led Zeppelin thing, and it just blew me away, and I thought, there's a world I don't even know anything about. So I picked up, I got a hold of some Jamie Abersole blues stuff, I just loved his stuff, and I just started playing the blues, and nothing but the blues, and right away, because I could play so well from classical music, all the rock players, you know, wanted to use me, and blues players, and started playing with John Hammond, and fooled around with the Allman Brothers a little bit, and the Tubes, and were around, and the Allman Brothers, and then I got a hold of Miles, and Miles Davis, and Jimi Hendrix is the first actual player that changed my life. Jimmy just changed everything for me. Yeah. And then Miles and then Grover Washington came along. It's sort of a chronology to this. Grover and then John McLaughlin and then Boney James and that's sort of how it went.
Wow. Man, those are very interesting combinations. You know, it's funny you brought up Jimi Hendrix, man. He's one of my influences as a musician. I play guitar also. And, you know, I remember 7 years old hearing Machine Gun. Totally changed the way I heard music and just the way the possibilities where you could take it. And, you know, it's just phenomenal.
You know, there's a story about John McLaughlin was invited by Miles, John's a guitar player, to sit in with Miles, who would just call him this new guy and say, come on over and you know what to do. And that was it. And so John McLaughlin really turned Miles on to Jimi Hendrix and on to electric playing, which led to Bitches Brew and all that Miles then did electrically from Hendrix. Hendrix really was the reason Miles Davis did that. And I mean, everybody knows how Miles Davis changed everybody. And then, of course, Grover. These influences are very important, really, to all of our lives.
It is. You know, I think a lot of these guys, the veterans, man, always talk about building that foundation, and I always look up to them as, you know, laying that and paving that way for newer musicians just to kind of follow in their tracks and, you know, take what's useful and apply it to your own foundation and, you know, just grow from there as a musician. And, you know, it's just real cool, man, that you were, you know, around that circle at the time, you know, really getting your chops together, man, and now you're just, you know, a well-seasoned musician, man. Hats off to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The classical players email me and call me from around the world to try and figure out what this word improvise means, or I always refer to the blues. It's so difficult to talk about without sitting with someone. Most of the, I guess you'd call them rock violinists or electric violinists out there, they play patterns, which is kind of a classical derivative of, you know, triads, and they play them in a rock feel, which is real cool. But I mean, you know, the blues is where that blues is really, where all of rock, I think, jazz and all of non-classical music is really based on the blues.
It is. You know, I always say, man, you want to put more edge and put more frown into your music, you know, get out the major scales and really get into the blues scale of your playing and displaying your talents, because I think that's where everybody really kind of gets their ear and they're kind of wanting to hear those blues. They don't know really how to identify it, but, you know, blues just really gives it that, like I said, puts the frown into music, puts that edge and oomph into it. So, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, right. In fact, if you ever sitting, I will tell you, sitting in the middle of a classical symphony orchestra, in the very middle of it, playing the violin, or actually the very middle is the woodwinds, it is like no other experience. I mean, the sound is amazing, and yet all the classical players I've played with before really don't know how to let go of that sheet music. They don't know how to express it, because it really is what it's really about. What all of rock, and I mean by rock, I mean jazz and blues and all of non-classical, is really about your ego.
Sure.
Because you're really talking to somebody. The more you're talking to somebody with your instrument in rock or blues or jazz, and so your ego is really what's going on, man. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Now, I got to ask you, Noel, being a violinist and, you know, now merging into the electronic violinist, the violin that you play, is that MIDI operated?
Is it MIDI? No, it's an analog out. It does have, it's called a Zeta, Z-E-T-A. I have a couple of Zetas. They sponsor me. And it has an analog and a MIDI out. And I'm going to start trying that MIDI to see what happens, but, you know, analog is much more personal, and so it's all analog at this point.
Wow. You know, it's amazing because the tone of your violin, it really stuck out to me, and I thought it was maybe a synth patch or something that you laid, or as an overtone over it, because it has a different tone than a traditional violin that I'm used to hearing. Is there any external pre's or effects that you're using to give it that thick sound, or...?
Well, I use one effect that plays an octave below it sometimes. And so the octave below, I can change the volume of that octave below and have it go in the background a little bit, but you still hear the octave below in that same note. So that thickens it. And then there's reverb, and that's about it, really. But to tell you the truth, the task I've had in all my years of playing hasn't really been playing as much as the sound. What sound do I really want? It's kind of like an electric guitarist. You know, we're always working on our sound. And I think I'm probably going to change even more again The first famous violinist was Jean-Luc Ponté.
Yeah.
There was Noel Pointer, Stephen Capelli, and a couple before them, Stuff Smith. But the first real famous one was Jean-Luc Ponté. And John would play with a phase shifter. And every single note went through a phase shifter. And I decided right away that the phase shifter was not allowing me to express myself. So no matter how straight the sound was, I really wanted it to be something I was saying with the violin. So the phase shifter, I threw that away.
Wow. Now, have you ever run any distortion type of effects on your violin?
I've tried it, and I'll use it on occasion, but the answer is really sort of, I guess, no.
Sure.
No distortion, no.
Right. Now, with the possibilities of MIDI these days, I was talking to a jazz guitarist named Steve Oliver, and he's using a device that allows him to trigger different synth patches and piano sounds through his guitar. And, I just feel at that point, being a guitarist or a violinist and having that possibilities of different patches, gets you to a different exploration of, your playing and your ear and just be able to play different instruments on the violin or guitar. It's just amazing me how technology has advanced these days.
Well, Spud, you're so intuitive because playing MIDI with the violin hasn't really been available like it has been for the guitar. Although I know I hear from guitar players, that doesn't quite make it even still with them. But a company called Stringport just came out with a MIDI application that does offer samples to me. And I am going to start trying it. And the reason I'm going to try it is that I own a company called SpiderCues, SpiderCues. And so the company represents 75 composers.
Wow.
One of the things I do for a couple hours a day is the composers send me music and I choose what will be best to deliver to trailers and films in Hollywood. And so SpiderCues has a lot of music that goes into a lot of trailers and film and TV. And because of that, I get to hear and love and enjoy all different kinds of music, rock and classical and jazz and bebop, whatever it is,
Sure.
And I love all sorts of stuff as long as it's done well. So the MIDI allows that to happen. You're right.
Wow, amazing. Noah, you've been tracking recording for so many years, merging from an analog world and now getting into the DAW world of recording. Have you, converted over to the DAW world, or are you still using an analog bass recording for your tracking?
That's very funny. The 2-inch tape, the satin sheets, which was two CDs ago, I guess, that was done on a 2-inch tape, which was very rare even then. That was 2001. And that was the last. I don't think anybody's using the analog anymore very much, but I wish I could go back to it. The word master only refers to that physical 2-inch tape.
Sure.
When they say, do you own the master? That really just means that physical 2-inch tape now because everything's digital.
Yeah.
Do you like analog tape? Are you playing guitar with that much?
I like analog recording. I started out in analog, I would say around 87, 88. And, I definitely got hotter signals, thicker, warmer signals through my analog bass recording. But, with the DAW system now, be able to run these external pres into your DAW system, your converters, you're able to capture that warmth from your pres. You just can't go without the editing functionalities of DAW these days. just cut and pasting and editing and really placing your parts where you want. I really love the DAW format of editing. But I kind of miss the traditional analog recording and tracking and, having a sequencer, just playing everything in live form, so.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Now, is there any external pres, mic pres of your choice that you've been tracking on?
No, because I'm not really using mics anyway.
Sure.
Everything's going in analog wise in the design I just mentioned. I'm thinking about playing mono in the next recording. That's stereo is what you're hearing on this last CD. And I kept asking the engineer, why don't we try this mono? And we never got there. Because I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, that should. Yeah, I would like to hear the mono signal versus stereo. Yeah, that
it was really shoved right in the middle, right in the middle.
Yeah.
And that'll be kind of neat, I think. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll definitely be right in your face with that mono signal, dead center.
Yeah. And then I could, if I did that, the EQ would be different, because well, we'd have to hear it then. But right at that point, when it's right in your face, you'd have to warm the heck out of it, and the EQ would be, that'd be very cool.
Yeah, something to definitely play around with for sure.
You know,
I got to ask you for compositions, whether you're putting your material together for yourself or for a film, television spot or a motion picture, sound scoring. Is there any particular methods that you use in a studio to build a project, or you kind of just let the creativity go where it's going to take you?
In the last couple of years, you're asking questions that I hadn't thought about before, but I'm just hitting on some things. I think the beginning of most of my tunes and most tunes is percussion. That first of all, I just love percussion, and as a bowing player, because I'm using a bow, if you can picture that on the violin, there's no real hit. I don't have a real hit because I'm bowing, unless it's a staccato. And so frequently in a gig, the drummer, percussion, and bass player will see me just walk right up to them, because I have to have that pocket. And if they're not in the pocket together because the sound isn't right on stage or in the recording, you'll see my face just drop, because I need that really clear, clean pocket from the two of them, because I'm a bowling player, so I'm kind of lost without knowing exactly where my body and where they're at. I also have a percussionist, his name is Eric McCain, and he's amazing, and he did all the percussion for The Lion King when he was traveling around the country. And so I was so fortunate to have Eric and Alonzo Powell plays the drums. Pete Bass Jones is a bass player. Joel Gaines is a keyboard player. Brian Price is a guitar player. Trina Stewart sang some tunes with Joel. And Eric McCain plays all these percussion on it. It just blows me away. I love percussion. That's how I begin tunes.
Sure. You know, it's interesting to talk about pocket. You know, I talk a lot about funk, being my foundation as a musician and player. And to me, I think it is of great importance to have a certain rhythm for me, and a lot of rhythmic players out there would probably agree that, having that rhythm behind you while you're composing and kind of looking for your chops and solos really helps, because it puts you on beat and placements for your notes. So, just the timing alone just takes the track to another place rather than starting from scratch off a basic metronome,
That's right. It's very fun being interviewed by a player like yourself. But, most of the interviews that I have, they're not musicians, but.
Right. For me, it's the reason for the show is to, get a different perspective from one musician to another, because there's a lot of guys out there that are always questioning, what the next man is doing. And, sometimes having that musician's ear can really bring out the questions a little bit better for their interviewee. So thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
I got to ask also, man, you've been performing and recording with so many veterans out there, like you said, from Herbie Hancock's The Headhunters to The Tubes, Grover Washington Jr., Rick James, Jermaine Jackson II, Tony Bennett. Man, how has that influenced you as a musician, having that, experience that you already have, but also being around the veterans and, somebody with a different ear and style? How does that really cultivate your sound as a musician?
The first thing you get when you play with what we call, those are called monsters. We all call them monsters, the players that can just kick it. And the first thing you get is you realize how good everybody is who's a monster. If you get past that, which you should immediately, you understand that they're really, again, playing the blues. They're really actually playing from their heart. And so that all this fame and or monstership is really irrelevant, that you just exchange, you're communicating with someone, so that's what's going on. And when you get to do that, you realize that's what you need to do, and that's what you're doing right then. But I do have a funny story. I was in being interviewed in a radio station. I think it was named John and Ken. No, not John and Ken. Ken and Brian. I think there was a radio station in L.A. And I was being interviewed in the booth. and there's a lot of commotion outside, and a limo pulled up, and everyone stopped. And just hold on a minute, Noel. And, you know, and we're live. But just hold on. And it was Tony Bennett who had arrived at the studio. So he got out, and it was a surprise. So he came in, and they said, Noel, can we interview, Tony with you? I said, are you kidding me? Of course you can. So Tony came in the booth. And the two of us were standing in a little tiny booth together. And they asked, can you guys play together? And I had my violin. And so they, obviously Tony said, let's do, your tune, which is I Left My Heart in San Francisco. So guess who didn't know the tune? And then I actually knew the head, which is I Left My Heart in San Francisco. I knew the head.
Sure.
And so here's Tony next to me. He's singing. Tony Bennett, next to me. And I'm playing the tune. And I really didn't know the bridge. How did it turn around, in the middle of the tune? And so I faked it. I vamped a little bit on that part. Because I'm copying Tony Bennett. He sings, and I'm just copying him.
Sure.
And I saw that little smile. I mean, he's the sweetest guy. He's the nicest guy you'll ever meet. A little glimmer out of his eye. He looks at me, realizing, you don't know this turnaround, do you? And, he knew, and I knew, I didn't know it. But he finished. It sounded great, so.
Wow. That, man, that's an amazing story. Just to be on stage with Mr. Tony Bennett, I mean, that's just an honor in itself. But I also talk a lot about, guys who are really great musicians. We can kind of get away with our talent on some things that the audience doesn't really know the difference just because of your skill level, but if another musician would be able to pick something like that up, so that's unreal.
That's right, exactly. That's right, yeah.
I gotta ask you also, Noel, I feel that every musician comes to a point where we reach that zone. I mean, where everything, you're just kind of in that center by yourself or with your bandmates and you're feeding off each other. Do you find get that zone in the studio or being on stage where you're gravitating off the energy of the audience and your band members?
Well, it's a good question. Definitely on stage. In the studio is a little bit harder, but on stage it's so wonderful because you're within, a few feet of everybody in the band. And so you're communicating. I mean, there was when I learned funk music way back in the late 70s, that came to me, it's funk, real straight ahead funk, was talking back and forth. So if you're hitting and someone would answer that, the guitar player or the drummer, that's what funk is talking, basically talking to each other. And that's where I learned what you're doing on stage. So I took that to every other part kind of music I was playing, jazz and rock. That you really try and listen very hard. Listening is more important than even playing when you're with other musicians, because you feed off it and you go.
Definitely. Funk is something else, man. I mean, that's just a totally another interview in itself. I mean, I could talk for hours and days on funk because there's so many different variations of it,
That's right. Well, recently, because the economy is short around the country and the world, sometimes they'll ask me to go and play with some tracks. So it's just me with tracks. And, it works. I mean, I can feed off the tracks, but, my band's not there.
Sure.
So it's kind of strange. Once I did a tour all through Japan with just tracks, it was very odd. But the audience liked it, so I got off on it. It was fun.
Right. Now, do you have a consistent band that you tour with and also track with in the studio, or do you have separate studio musicians for each different project?
They're all the same, and they're right on the back of that CD. Those are the ones I named. I think a team is really important to keep growing together. I have thought about doing some recording with some other people, but it wouldn't mean that my band was not that band. The band seen on the back of that CD of Give It All. And I love my band. It's great.
Right. No, I agree. You want to give the audience something that when they hear the CD, it translates well on the stage. Having those band members that are in recording session usually helps when you're putting show together. Not much rehearsal time. It's just really knowing the parts and kind of going a few things. So, yeah, having that relationship and bonding with your bandmates is, my first choice. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Well, Scott, haven't you played? I'm sure you have. I've played in bands that were put together for me. I think I went down to Brazil and a couple other places. And so bands are put together for you, and there you spend a day rehearsing with them, you get on stage. And you can tell, and the audience can tell, that that's what that is, rather than the smiles that happen in my band. That we're ready to go, here we go, we're playing, and we all support solos and support the whole thing, each other playing. And this is the smiling constantly on my stage because we're all really enjoying each other's playing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it also goes back to what I mentioned earlier, is like, you know, bandmates who are maybe new can get away just on mere talent. But do you really know your bandmates on a personal level? Because I think everybody's personality translate into their craft as a keyboardist, a drummer, a violinist, a guitar player. And, you know, when you know that person, you guys just kind of just know each other so well, you don't have to look at each other. You're already there at the same moment in time. And, you know, it's hard to capture for newbies on stage and, you know, new bandmates.
That's right. And my band members, some of them have their own CDs. Joel Gaines has a new CD called Just the Way I'm Feeling. He will play. That's coming out soon. And, of course, my CD, Give It All, is fun, too. So there's a lot of CDs out there to buy. And I hope the audience looks around and gets these things.
Definitely. So, man, what is on the musical agenda for 2010? What do you have on plate other than the hot CD you got out?
Well, there's talk from my publicist to go on to talk about CBS, The Early Show, BET, and I think I'll be back at the Baked Potato in Los Angeles, which I love playing at. And I'll be going to Boston the end of July, the beginning of August, for about a week to fool around over there. That's what's going on right away. I'll be going back into recording soon. I'm not sure what that's going to be. That's going to be a surprise. That's going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah. Recording process is always a surprise, man.
I know. You want to play some? Maybe we should play together. Maybe.
Oh, man, I am on it. You name the date.
Great, yeah. I love to play.
Well, Noel, it's been a pleasure having you on my show. I would love to have you back, talk about your new endeavors, new CDs, your tour dates, anything you have new. Please come back, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner. I would love to collaborate with you on the project. I mean, I think it would be amazing.
Well, you know, Spud Too Tight, Producer's Corner, it's really a wonderful thing that you're doing, and I just really support Spud, everything you're doing there on the show. Thank you for having me. I hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Oh, definitely, no. We'll definitely keep in touch, man. You have a safe and happy 2010, man.
Thanks, Spud. Bye-bye.
All right, take it easy. And a big shout out to Noel Webb for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, another honor for me to speak to somebody on Noel's level. I mean, he's an amazing musician. He definitely knows what he wants within his project, you know, from the basic melody to the end result and, you know, just the whole direction of his music. I mean, he just really has a good feel of where to take compositions and his solos. And, you know, again, it's just another honor for me to speak to somebody of his level of musicianship, man, and just to get the inspiration and learn from him. So, again, big thank you and a shout out to Noel Webb. And for more information on Noel Webb, you need to check out his website at www.noelwebb.com, and that's spelled NOELWEBB.com. And again, that's www.noelwebb.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well, www.myspace.com/Spud's New Zone. And I also host a podcast on iTunes, so if you have a computer or an iTunes phone, go to the iTunes store and type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spudtootight@gmail.com. And again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in, joining in, and listening in. And to close out the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background. It's by Noel Webb, and the title of the track is called The Ride. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.